You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com on WCRS FM 98.3 and 102.1, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network and TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Welcome to Key Facts with Grady Pettigrew, law and business for everyday living. And thank you for joining us today. Law and business is a pretty pervasive topic, and so today we're going to talk about fathers and also the responsibility of fathers. And I'm very pleased to have in the studio with me Michael Hargrove, who is doing some important work here in our community, and it's really addressing needs that are in many cases unaddressed or certainly underserved. Michael, first, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, sir. It's my pleasure to be here, and I'm really excited to talk to you today.
Right. Well, thank you. Tell us what it is that you do. You have an organization, and tell us about the organization and what you do.
Yes, I am the CEO and founder of Dads Incorporated, and we are a parent consulting firm. Now, what we do specifically are three things in the community. We help develop parenting programs for organizations. We also sponsor community outreach events. We also work in the area of really being an ambassador for the message of fatherhood. And so everything that we do falls under that general umbrella.
I guess in a lot of corners, the issues of fatherhood are very, very strongly divided. There are people who love fathers and people who seem to hate fathers. So I guess I'm interested in why did you focus on this work concerning fathers?
Well, I think growing up, I was honestly in both categories. I didn't establish a relationship with my father until, you know, I was a teenager. And I had positive male role models around, my uncles, for example. But as far as that day-to-day interaction, that was something, you know, unfortunately, that I lacked. And not because I necessarily lacked, again, the example. I didn't realize what I was missing until I was older. And when I say lack, simply meaning there's something about establishing a bond with a family member. It's been written about for centuries, but there's nothing like a bond with a family member, a mother, a father, a true blood brother. And so while we may disagree with our family members, we may at times really dislike them, there's always an incredible bond that keeps us connected. And when you lack that connection with someone, it adversely affects you. And you don't, again, sometimes realize as a youth, you know, why am I angry? Why am I sad? Maybe why am I distant? Why is it hard for me to connect? And so as you're going through your, say, early existence, if you will, you're acting in a way that you may not understand. It may have, unfortunately, an adverse effect. And then when you're older and you look back and it's like, man, now I understand why maybe it was hard for me to have a positive relationship with males or relating maybe potentially to women. If you say, for example, you even had a negative relationship with your mother.
Well, I think that it's interesting. Many times it's been said that women can't teach a man to be a man, you know, a boy to be a man.
Yes, sir.
And I think that sort of bears out what you're saying. I remember as a very young boy being fascinated with men shaving. At that point had very little hair and no real need to shave, but it was fascinating to me. And you couldn't have learned how to shave from
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. But the other thing I guess is that there is a pervasive need for involvement with fathers because in many cases you're talking about training, not about retraining.
Absolutely.
So what are you focusing on in terms of these young fathers and their need for help and involvement?
Well, when I first started the work, it literally started as a support group because I myself had repeated the cycle. I was a single father, meaning I was unmarried at the time my child was born. And I said, you know what? I don't want to be or mirror where I came from. However, when I was looking for resources, I couldn't find any. Now, I was a first-time father. I wasn't a teenage father. I wasn't even a young adult father. I was turned 26, just turned 27 after my daughter was born. And so, you know, I wasn't naive, I should say, to the world. But I do realize that, hey, I needed to do something different quickly. And so when I look back at my situation and I was like, wow, well, I started as a support group, I came across fathers, grandfathers, father figures of all types. And what I realized was like the greatest need were those first time fathers who has never changed a diaper before, for example. I mean, I had younger sisters, so that wasn't foreign to me, who had never, you know, if they had a little girl, never braided a hair or literally have never had to stay up all night with a crying baby. Some people just have never experienced that. And so those who are most vulnerable were those who were, you know, younger, who are barely understanding who it is, who they are as an individual. And so we really began to, you know, again, after years of doing this type of work, realize like, you know, we need to focus on a specific market. And that's that first time father who is between the ages of, and we found them throughout the years, 12 to 25. And the reason being is they're the ones most vulnerable to loss because they have the least amount of knowledge, typically the least amount of financial resources, social capital, meaning they may have a lot of friends on Facebook, but they don't have anybody who could help if they needed to get an apartment, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, I can have a bunch of teenage friends, but they can't help me maybe get a job with a company. And so, again, even though we were similar in that I was a first-time father, but the difference between myself and a 12-year-old is that I'm legal. I can make legal decisions. Now, as a underage father, I've now affected my parents, who are now also legally responsible for this child I created. And so those are just a few of the reasons that we decided to really start to hone in our focus on those first-time fathers.
I guess the question that I have, there are a lot of issues. You mentioned some of the economic issues. There are some social issues. But there are some practical issues, especially when you talk about a 12-year-old. I mean, they're a father. What is that, just a biological situation?
Well, as being a judge, I'm sure you've come across 1,001 legal situations that, you know, you look at somebody and say, wouldn't common sense tell you, even if you didn't know the law, wouldn't common sense tell you not to do this? Well, with 12-year-olds, a lot of times they are really ostracized because, oh, my God, how could you do this at 12, 13, 14, especially looking at a young boy and a young girl? Typically, young boys are kind of looked at as the perpetrators mm-hmm. of this. And what it is that the world is fighting hormones. A biology that we still haven't totally mapped out, a brain pattern that we totally haven't mapped out. So how can we realistically monitor every hormonal 12, 13, 14-year-old child? It's impossible. You can come from an incredible environment, but that doesn't change the fact that you got all these raging hormones. And literally, if my hormones take over and I lose my mind, I'm going to react to them. And that's really what it boils down to in helping the parents understand that, no, that doesn't necessarily mean you are a bad parent because your child had a child. It just means that, hey, maybe there's some gaps that we can fill, be it as education on even their psychological or physical development, that can help.
That seems like a number and maybe an overwhelming set of issues because – yes. In that young situation, the parents have responsibility for continuing to support the child because he's not 18.
Or absolutely.
And yet, he now has brought a whole panoply of issues,
yes,
including an ethical, if not any other, responsibility for supporting this child that has now been created.
Absolutely.
And if the girl is 12 or 13 years of age, she doesn't have any more resources than he does. It's a question of whose parents are going to step up. And in some cases, I'm sure the parents have too little resources to do Okay. So those are all the issues.
Right, exactly. And so we're not trying to, it's like trying to say I'm going to cure cancer tomorrow. No, that's not going to happen. But we do know there are some key issues that when we come across these situations, we have to understand the legal ramifications. I'm not an attorney. I'm not a judge. However, I do know that there is a possibility that if your underage child, in particular son, has sexual relations with another underage child, and I believe it's 16, it could be considered statutory rape, mm-hmm. and charges may not necessarily be pressed by either parent. The state could pick them up because they are legally obligated based on this particular incident happening. And again, these are, if nothing else, protecting your child from, I mean, if we can have some serious conversation, he could literally become a sex offender.
But as a juvenile.
So as a juvenile.
Not as an adult.
As an adult. Yeah. But
certainly as
label.
They get older than the other.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so now what do you do when that child potentially has charges brought up against him at 12, 13, and literally all they were doing was being a hormonal, doesn't justify, mm-hmm. but they literally were acting out based on their hormonal development at that time.
Well, I guess you've pretty well described a very pervasive problem, pervasive in that we know. I always am sad when the spring comes and I see the number of young girls, I mean, talking about 12, 13, 14,
yeah.
with their strollers out with these new babies, proud as they can be with these new babies.
Yes,
and that just is, to me, it's a tragedy and they're happy as can be. But they're also generally getting on the bus because they don't have any other resources. So you've given an overview of this broad problem. What do you do to address the problem? Do you have an educational component? What do you do?
Well, there's three areas that we focus on. And as I said, the umbrella of what we do is DADGE Incorporated. And again, it's about the outreach and being an ambassador, you know, ambassador using this platform, for example, to talk about these issues and also program development. What we've noticed in schools is that there are three things that are needed. With, in particular, underage fathers or young fathers. When I say young fathers, meaning that 19 to 25 who potentially may be in college, things of that nature. And that's prevention. Now, prevention is teaching a young boy about being a young boy. And a lot of times, if they come from, say, for example, a single-parent household in which the mother is the primary caregiver, you know, sometimes that's missing as far as, you know, Mom may not be able to show me how to tie a tie. She may be able to show me how to balance my checkbook. There's a lot of things that are done. But when it comes to how, like you said, just something as simple as shaving my face, you know, that is intervention. Having someone to step in and say, hey, I'm a male. Let me go into a school and do a tying seminar. Why is that important? Well, it's not about the fact that you're teaching someone how to tie a tie. You're getting an opportunity to establish a relationship with someone who may have some questions. And that's just a door opener. Maybe you can volunteer as a coach for a youth league. Not necessarily because you have the skill of Michael Jordan or the arm of Drew Brees. It's just, it'll give you opportunity, if that's your heart desire, to be in front of those young boys who, unfortunately, because of our society, you're going to know a lot of these kids aren't going to have a positive male role model. And that's the intervention side. And this is before they become a parent. Now that we have the prevention, now we have intervention. Intervention is now that a 12, 13, 14-year-old has, you know, created a child, immediately working with the grandparents, who are really the primary customer, to say, what can we do to establish some basic necessities? You know, what are the financial needs? Is that child old enough potentially to work? What are the legal ramifications? You know, how do you get your right to establish things of that nature? Resolving conflict with the parents. So that could be, you know, grandparent-to-grandparent counseling along with child-to-child counseling. And then also reconciliation. This is one of the most critical areas that I believe we can help our society, is that there are plenty of fathers already out there who, for multiple reasons, are disconnected from their children. And so if we can work towards healing, which again goes back to the counseling, the financial empowerment and education, we can then begin to reconcile some of these disconnected fathers. And so we're not, again, having to develop 10,000 different programs for children that already have two parents.
Well, you've given us a good bit to think about, and we're just getting started. I want to tell our listeners about a conversation with Dawn Karima. Honey Dawn Karima, Creek Cherokee, hosts this exciting Native American talk radio show which features inspiring conversations with outstanding Native American achievers. This program that features lively, insightful discussions with fascinating Native American artists, authors, musicians, educators, media professionals, creators, and thinkers, broadcast Mondays on TalkTainmentRadio.com. I guess there's one other thing, just for community information. The African American Male Wellness Walk Initiative is sponsoring an urban redevelopment, urban health solutions event on Thursday, February 20th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Gateway Wellness Center, 112 Jefferson Avenue here in Columbus, 43215. We have a major redevelopment program going on in the 43203 zip code. And one of the things that is consistent with that redevelopment and also the purpose and activities of the African-American Male Wellness Walk is identifying health and wellness resources. So that's what's going to actually happen on February 20th. There's going to be a discussion about that. We're pleased to have attorney Fred Ransier, who is going to serve as keynoter, who described this major redevelopment. And then Dr. Mark White, an internist who serves this community, John Talbert, who is Director of Community Services for Columbus Neighborhood Health Center, Dr. Kevin Brooks, who is the Program Director at the African American Extension Center, and Fred Johnson, who's going to be representing Columbus Public Health Department. He is in Health Programs Office of Minority Health. So we're looking for just a great deal of information and opportunity. And we're asking that you contact the walk at 614-754-7511 to register, or you can email aamwalk@gmail.com. This is an important community event, and you can certainly have contact and get information by calling 614-754-7511 to register, or by sending your email to aamwalk@gmail.com. So you're all invited, and the event is free. All right, Mr. Hargrove, you have given us the outline of what you do. And I guess I'm curious about what can you tell us about both the challenge and the success that you encounter in doing this work?
Well, the only challenge that we have realistically, and I know this may seem pie in the sky, the only challenge, the greatest challenge, I should say, is the willingness of the father. Because when you have, for example, a bonded parent, and you're a parent yourself, and is there anything you wouldn't do for your children? Even when they got on your nerves and may have broke your favorite, spilled Coca-Cola on your favorite, it doesn't, no matter what your children do, when you are bonded to that child, you will do anything and everything for them. The biggest challenge is finding fathers who are properly bonded to their children. Because once they're properly bonded, you don't necessarily need a Dad United, African-American Male Health Wellness Walk. They will do whatever they can to stay in their child's life as long as possible. They will seek the help. What happens is working with that unwilling father, the father that's really hurt, that's suffering from brokenness, that's angry, because it's not like it's not in his heart to do for his child. It's just that there are a lot of emotional barriers that a lot of times are kind of brushed over, and he's always just a deadbeat. He's a bad guy. It's like, no, he's a broken child too. He hasn't healed from his own childhood issues. Doesn't give him any reason. It's just that he hasn't had the opportunity to properly bond with that child. And a lot of times that happens because if there's a disconnect when the child is, you know, first conceived, then initially born, it's very hard to backtrack when that child is 3, 4, 6, 18 years old to say, hey, let me establish a bond all of a sudden.
Well, it's an interesting perspective because you keep talking about the father. It's about 6 months or so ago. I listened to a conversation, and I thought it was interesting that the young woman had just recently given birth, difficult birth. She was a high-risk mother, very young. And all of the conversation focused on what the father of the child had not done. There was no conversation that says, what did you do?
Absolutely.
What was your participation in creating this? And the second part of it, there were either three or four women who were listening to her story, and they all were affirming her. She is the pillar of innocence, and he is terrible.
Absolutely.
So if he tries to come and establish a relationship with that child, that's going to be the valence, the negative valence that's all around that discussion. Oh, here he comes again. Don't have anything. I mean, I'm telling you, you know this story.
No. I'm not. Look, I'm not only a client, I'm the president. So. And I do this work not because I have all the answers. I do this work because I still have a whole bunch of unanswered questions myself.
Okay.
And you're right, sir. And what happens is that, for example, again, go back to the hormonal, you know, a teenager, if you would, scenario. You have two children who basically are the same as far as their emotional and potentially intellectual development.
Right.
And so at that point, they are both guilty for not having enough self-discipline. And regardless of how they got to that point, maybe they weren't parented. I mean, there's a myriad of reasons. But then as an adult, both parties should know better. I always ask the question, for example, if you have a child with a man and you know he has multiple children with multiple women, why would you expose yourself to that?
Right.
That's like a man walking up to you and say, you know, I have HIV. Mm-hmm. You know, I will not use protection. I'm still going to sleep with you if you let me. And she says, okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then she gets HIV and then blames him for giving her HIV. Mm-hmm. I'm giving you as graphic an example because that's really potentially a death sentence a lot of times.
Sure.
for people. When I say death sentence, having a child, what I mean by this is it could financially destroy you if your finances aren't in order. It can emotionally destroy you. And then on top of that, it can emotionally destroy that child.
Yes.
And so look at what you are perpetuating by exposing yourself, women. Look at what you're, you know, perpetuating by exposing yourself, men. I mean, there are women who have multiple children by multiple men.
Yes.
And, you know, again, aren't necessarily looked at as a perpetuator, but they looked at still as a victim. And at what point can we both look at each other and say, you know what? I don't want to put myself in a compromising position. I don't want to put you in a compromising position. And I don't want to put potentially a child in a compromising position. And what I just said is unisex.
Well, the interesting thing that you're also raising is that you mentioned the HIV can be a death sentence. But the fact of the matter is when you become a parent, I don't care who it is, it's a life sentence. And I mean by that a lifelong responsibility. There is no scenario that I'm aware of that says that your child is 40, they don't have a right to call on you because you're their parents.
Your child is
50, 60, it doesn't matter. As long as your relationship is that of parent to child, they still have a right to call on you.
Okay, so I thought it was over at 18.
No.
Wait, but hold on. I'm in this work. I just realized this.
No.
This is new to me.
I guess we're gonna stop the distinction of what the law says because
absolutely.
If I went to the other side of the world and asked, what responsibility does a parent have to the child, and they would say to support the child. When does it stop? They don't know anything about the laws of Ohio.
Absolutely.
They don't know anything about it. They said, what are you talking about to stop? This is a family relationship. This has been around.